This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury and I'm joined in the studio today by
Arvind Viraj
and Christine Wong.
We, as usual, will be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with our little show, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Stories today. We're starting off with a story about how a mall in China have put special traffic lanes in. For stupid people staring at their phones. We'll be talking about that. And then Arvind has a story about a wearable chair.
Yeah.
These two stories are not related. Then we have another story about how Goldman Sachs' AI predicts Brazil will win the World Cup. Do we need AI to predict that?
No.
No, I don't think we do.
It used to be an octopus, so I guess we've
just... used to be an octopus.
Yeah.
He died, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Last year, I think it was, or the year
he
before.
He did.
Yeah. And then story number four, Uber are working on AI to identify drunk passengers. Do we need that as well?
No.
No, right? And then finally, a story. Even in the desert, an innovative device pulls fresh water out of thin air.
That one we do need.
Yeah. Let's start out with the traffic lane for phone users in China.
Yeah, so the problem with China is that so ubiquitous in China are pedestrians glued to their cell phones to the point where they've actually earned a nickname. So people who are glued to their cell phones in China are called the heads down tribe.
Wow.
Yes. So in their natural habitat, tribe members can be seen texting, watching videos, and conducting financial transactions, all while dodging cars, tripping at potholes, and jamming up subway station entrances. Now, the World Health Organization calls such behavior distracted walking, but it's actually becoming a growing health concern in China, where pedestrian deaths make up a very significant number of traffic-related fatalities.
68,000 per year, I read.
Well, 68,000 pedestrians per year are 68,000 pedestrians are killed every year in China, which is more than a quarter of 260,000 people killed annually in road accidents.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big percentage of that. So in Xi'an, a shopping mall called Bairui Plaza has created pedestrian lanes that are specifically for cell phone users. So the mall spokeswoman said, "We are not actually advocating for pedestrians to look at their phones, but we also can't regulate people's activities and tell them that you're not allowed to look at your cell phone while walking. So messages that are painted along the lane cajole walkers to look up and pay attention." They say things like, "Please don't look down for the rest of your life." And another message is just path for the special use of the heads down tribe as well. So they're kind of looking at this from a sort of tongue-in-cheek attitude, you know, and they're trying to bring some awareness to the issue of distracted walking. Mm. However, people have been very split on this decision because some people have argued that the lanes would only increase the likelihood of cell phone users walking into each other if they're all in the same lane. Another user wondered what made mobile phone users deserving of special pathways, which are typically reserved for the visually impaired or the physically impaired otherwise.
Yep.
You know, so it's kind of something that has gone kind of viral and people are very split about this. Also, this mall is not the first to try to create some sort of pedestrian phone path. In 2014, a street in the southwestern city of Chongqing was divided into two sections. On one side, phone use was completely prohibited, but on the other side, walkers were allowed to use their phones at their own risk. And the German city of Augsburg in 2016 embedded traffic lights on the surface of the street to prevent texting pedestrians from walking into traffic as well. Distracted walking is a big problem.
Don't giggle.
I can't help it.
So distracted walking is a big problem. What is interesting, though, is that in China, distracted driving is actually banned entirely. So drivers caught on their phones can be fined 200 yuan and be penalized with points on their driver's licenses. So I think they're trying to move towards penalizing distracted walking as well. Mm.
And I suppose that will add to the social, what was it, where they
credit
the social credit system as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole tongue-in-cheek thing of it, you know, I like the idea of it. I think that's a bit of fun, you know, that kind of works. Mm-hmm. But when it gets a little bit serious, you know, it's a worrying thing that we have to put these lanes in, even if it is tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you say things like, you know, someone looking at their phone walking into traffic, it sounds funny. It sounds like something out of a comedy, but it's not. I mean, if in real life, the guy gets killed.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have to have lanes for people, like they have a whole tribe. The other thing is, I don't think you should be calling them things like the the heads down tribe or something. It sounds okay.
It's a good band name.
It's a good band name. Yeah. It should be like how you just say people are dumb walking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you don't want people to do something, you just shame them out of doing it.
Right.
If it's for the proper reasons, you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be looking down at your phone. So it's just dumb walking, spinal problem walking, impending neck therapy in future walking, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I don't know. It sounds like... it's something that they cannot curb easily because everyone has a phone. So I guess they're taking like a proactive measure to make sure that people are safe at least.
I mean, do you think the... how would you put it? When you're in this mall and you're not part of the head down tribe or whatever, you know, you see these people walking past, that would be the time when you'd pull your phone out and start filming these people walking
past.
That's the other thing too. That's going to be what's going to happen,
right? The fact
of
the matter is photos of these paths have already gone viral.
Right.
You know, so that in and of itself shows that, you know, while they are interesting, I don't know if they're contributing more to the problem by being so easy to talk about on social media.
Right.
I think that tends to happen with a lot of ideas to try and prevent people from using their phones or technology too much, because it ends up that someone inevitably posts about that on a piece of technology, and then it goes viral, and then, you know, so it's a weird cycle.
All right, ask people at home a question then.
Yeah, so I was wondering, you know, do the people at home or in their cars or whatever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, do you guys think that these pedestrian phone lanes would work here? Do you think they're a good idea, a bad idea? You know, just let us know.
We don't even have pavements for most of the places as well.
That's the thing, right? So maybe.
Let me ask a question. Know. Do the zebra crossings work here? Does anyone stop? Yeah, so, you know.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, I'll say that if they had a lane like this, it might work. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see like a row of people just using their phones and like walking in line.
Right.
There's
one of the head down brigade over there. You know, get a photo. It'd be like going out on safari.
Yeah,
that's what we could do.
Yes.
Wow. Right. Okay, let's move on. 018-789-8899, of course, is the WhatsApp number. Or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Should we install what they call phone texting lanes?
I'm calling them pedestrian phone lanes.
Pedestrian phone lanes. Mm. Would they work here in Malaysia? Let us know. Bit of fun. Right, moving on. Story number two. Sit anywhere you like with this wearable chair.
Yeah, it's actually called the chairless chair.
The chair. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
It's called Noonie's chairless chair.
Noonie's?
Yeah, I'm not even kidding. It's called Noonie's chairless chair. It's from Germany. It was invented.
Noonie's or no knees?
N-O-O-N-E-E.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where does he find these stories?
I honestly don't know.
It came out of Germany. they invented it in 2014. That's when the prototype came out. And then now they started to actually make them and sell them to offices and stuff. So Noonie's chairless chair has moved into production and is being used at major companies like Daimler and at Audi.
Okay, you keep saying chairless chair.
Yeah.
How does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you describe it to us?
So a chairless chair is actually an exoskeleton that you wear. So it's like a harness that you wear on your back.
Uh-huh.
And then it literally is an exoskeleton of the way your legs are shaped. And if you want to sit down, you literally just bend and make like a sitting posture or position, and this thing buckles into place and it lets you sit down.
I saw that. Yeah. I've seen a video of this way back when. I thought it was a joke.
No.
But I guess it wasn't a joke.
No.
Okay.
And it's super difficult to describe this on air without like the visuals and stuff. So I guess it's
like a pair of metal pants.
Yes.
And then you sit, and when you sit, it locks into place.
Yes.
So that you can sit.
Yes. Like metal pants, but if pants were only at the back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Metal half pants.
Metal half pants, and it's strapped onto a harness that you wear on your back.
Okay, we're losing flow of this.
Go on. Get on with it.
Yeah, so according to Noonie, Germany's employee population is aging, with the number of 50-plus-year-olds employees set to double by 2021 from where it was in 2011. Its research also shows that along with age, there's a lot of people who take like days off and MCs and stuff, and one driver of the sick days is muscle tissue and skeletal problems. So they are offering like today's aging workers with a convenient place to sit down and rest their muscles and bones whenever they need it. So this is so this is mostly for people who work standing jobs,
right?
And not so much for people who are at their desk
want to sit down whenever they want
so that they don't have to like pull up a chair or look for like a place to rest and stuff. They are literally wearing the chair that they need.
The chairless chair
So the chairless chair presents a cost-effective way of addressing work-related muscle and skeletal issues without requiring any upgrades to factory floors. So no major company cash outlay. The company doesn't have to fix any, standing computers or standing desks and stuff. Literally, when they need to take a break, they have their chair in place. So when the user feels, when they feel the need for it, they position themselves accordingly and rely on the switchable lock to secure the frame in place, creating an effective seat that supports his or her weight.
So, okay, as much as we've mocked this for the elderly and the infirm, know, people who, you know, they're walking on the street or they're doing their shopping or whatever, and they're just like, I just need to sit down.
Yeah.
You know, perfect idea. Yeah. Or for those boyfriends who are waiting for their girlfriends who are in the shopping malls and in the and vice versa, you know, and they want a break, you can just sit down wherever you want.
I was thinking also for people who are, let's say they're going on a holiday or something, and you often have to queue up for tourist attractions or something like that. No, but to be honest, like sometimes I'll see, for example, whenever I go to Kekloksi in Penang, the temple, there are a lot of older people there, and they don't often have a place to sit down, but it's a long line going up to the, the elevator thing. That's not called an elevator thing, but that's what I'm calling it right now. So, you know, that would be useful for them because there's only one bench in that queue, and sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I should offer or whatever, and that would be really good for people who are waiting and they are not as strong and they can sit down.
Do we have a price on these things?
No. So the way they price it is that they don't sell over the counter or like over the countertop to people. They sell it to companies, so it's like it's a B2B.
Right.
So they say that it depends on how many of these devices the company needs, the type of company, and how they need the devices modified. Then they'll price it.
Theme parks.
Right.
But theme then parks you'd, really
but,
get on this.
But then you'd have to take them off as you get on the ride.
Yeah, but that's fine because you're going to probably be sitting down on the ride.
Yeah, true.
And just like, you know, you give it back to the person at the front, it goes back to the back, then people can sit while they queue.
Oh, yeah. And it's not so heavy. It's about 3.4 kg. Yeah. 3.4 kg on your back is fine, you know, because you're using the whole weight of your back to lift it.
Who'd have thunk it? The chairless chair.
Nice. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. I like that idea, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it looks funny, but it's super useful.
The more we talk about it, though, I think the more we like it.
It reminds me of what's that thing in the Aliens movie that she walks around in? The exoskeleton.
Kind of reminds me of that. The second Aliens.
Me of that. Okay, time for a break. Don't forget, we started off the show with a story about a mall in China. They're putting in traffic lanes just for people staring at their phones. Mm-hmm. Let us know if you think that something like that would work here in Malaysia. 018-789-8899. Of course, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. Time for a short break. We've got some Cooler Shaker with Hush here on BFM 89.9.
Brewing Financial Minds, BFM 89.9.
Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Viraj
and Christine Wong.
We've had two stories so far. We've had a mall in China is putting in traffic lanes just for people staring at their phones. And then we've had a story about you can sit anywhere with this no-chair, the wearable chair.
The chairless chair.
The chairless chair.
The chairable.
The chair. Oh, dear. Then, of course, we did ask whether or not you guys thought that these traffic lanes would be something that would work in Malaysia. We've had a couple of responses. One of them's a little bit harsh.
Yeah, so
but let's read it anyway, and then maybe this person can, you know, we can put a smile on their face by reading out their message.
Yeah, so, well, this is on Twitter, and it comes from at CherylGSH. And Cheryl says, don't build the lanes. We should wean these people out. Let natural selection take its course in this climate of technology dependency and overpopulation.
Happy thoughts, Cheryl. Happy thoughts.
Wow. I mean, okay, I do understand that distracted walking is a huge issue. But I also do want to point out that sometimes people are looking at their phones while walking for a reason. For example, I know that I tend to get... I don't like getting lost, so I will usually pull out Google Maps to...
In a mall.
Not in the mall, but these lanes are also outside the mall. Just to clarify. But also just in general, I might be looking at my phone to look at directions for where I need to go to next, for example. So I you know.
All right. Do keep the messages coming in. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio as our happy friend Cheryl just did. Moving on to story number three, how Goldman Sachs have used AI to predict Brazil will win the World Cup. Story finished, music. Yeah. Go on, tell us more.
So they've tried this before, Goldman Sachs. So after incorrectly predicting how the 2014 tournament would turn out, they are trying again, and its calculations say that France France, Brazil, Portugal, and Germany will make it to the semifinals, with Brazil beating out Germany in the final game. They've used machine learning to come up with these predictions, feeding team characteristics, individual player data, and recent team performance information into four machine learning models, which then compared the data to the scores of all the World Cup and European Cup matches since 2005. Goldman Sachs then ran the 1 million simulations of World Cup outcomes to determine who would come out on top. They say that we captured the stochastic nature of the tournament carefully using state-of-the-art statistical methods, and we consider a lot of information in doing so. First of all, Brazil have won the most World Cups. They've won like five.
Right.
1958, 62, 70, 94, and 2002.
Statistically.
So you don't need machine learning or like some sophisticated data to know that Brazil can win. There's a huge chance that they could win this year as well. They've, you know, they're those guys. They're like the kings of football. But also, EA makes makes better predictions, because they correctly predicted that Germany would win in 2014, and they've tapped France as this year's winner, who they say will win out over Germany in a match largely decided by penalties. So they're even more specific than that. Yeah, EA.
Did they use machine learning as well, or did they just have a bunch of fellas sat around
no,
in the
I
room?
Think they had like a round table and some chips and stuff.
Doesn't EA have some sort of I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, please, but isn't there some sort of football game out there where you can control the things and they can predict where the players
FIFA,
go.
Yes. FIFA, yeah.
That game, the what that that's the I know, I only know some video
they
games.
They play thousands of games
but,
of FIFA. Yeah,
yeah, but my point is that, you know, with that, you know, it could be from that kind of database of information that they have on like certain players or certain teams, where they know how these teams generally play.
Right.
Whereas the other I don't know what data exactly that Goldman Sachs is pulling from. You know, like if they're just pulling from statistics, then duh, like Brazil, right? But it have they, you know, for example, looked at all the previous matches between these two specific teams and stuff like that, like, you know?
They say that they've compared scores for all the World Cup and European Cup matches since 2005. And then they ran like 1 million simulations. And they also have feeding team characteristics, individual player data, and recent team performance information.
So they they borrow the data from EA.
EA, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I like is that Goldman Sachs is in the World Cup fever as well. I mean, I know they're doing this because they're like super excited, the same thing that people did for with the octopus and stuff for the last few years. So it's nice, but it's also like if back when Mike Tyson was still fighting, and if he had an opponent, you if you're taking a bet, you would bet
on Mike Tyson.
Same for Muhammad Ali,
pretty much.
So yeah, who knows?
All right, I like that. But okay, who's your team then? You know, who would you be going with?
I'm going with EA.
I'm going with EA too.
Germany,
oh, you're going with EA?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm going to go with Goldman Sachs.
Brazil?
Yeah.
I'm going with EA.
Right.
I don't watch any football.
I am Switzerland in this discussion because I know nothing about football.
Put your pretend money where your mouth is. All right, let's take a very short break.
$10.
You cheapskate. Time for a very short break. It is Elvis Costello coming up with The Beat, followed by INXS with The Loved Ones here on Enterprise BizBytes. When we get back, our next story, how Uber are working on their AI to identify drunk passengers. I think we can all do that just by looking at somebody, right?
Yeah.
All right, time for some music. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong.
Arvind Yuvraj.
Started off the show today with how a mall in China are putting in a traffic lane just for people who keep staring at their phones. Silly people. Then we had a story about you can sit anywhere you want with this wearable chair, the chairless chair, also known as
the chairable.
There you go, the chairable. Mm-hmm. Then how Goldman Sachs are using AI to predict that Brazil will win the World Cup. Smart folks, apparently. EA are going with Germany, as
Germany.
Is Arvind.
I'm going with Germany.
And he's going to lose all of his money. And now we have a story about how Uber are working on AI to identify drunk passengers. Now, we may have laughed about this, but there's quite a serious message behind this, right?
Yeah, so according to CNN, Uber has filed a patent for a machine learning application that could accurately predict a user's state of sobriety and alert the driver with this information. So the application describes an AI that will learn how you typically use the Uber app so that it can better spot unusual behavior. Its algorithms will weigh a number of factors, including typos, walking speed, how precisely you press in-app buttons, and the amount of time it takes standing on the curb to order a ride. For example, someone botching most words, swaying side to side on the curb, and taking 15 minutes to order a ride will probably be fairly intoxicated.
So they're gamifying being drunk.
Kind of. The issue. Uber's patent also says it could potentially use the technology to deny rides to users based on the current state, or perhaps match them with other drivers with relevant skills or training. The idea is that this will help to increase safety for both rider and driver because, according to a recent CNN investigation, at least 103 Uber drivers have been accused of sexually assaulting or abusing passengers in just the past 4 years, and a significant number of those abused were intoxicated. But I'm very, very split on this whole idea because for me personally, yes, obviously sexual abuse is not a joke and should definitely be, you know, any measure to try and curb that kind of behavior should, you know, I think is great, except that kind of the whole point of a ride-hailing app is to help people not to drive drunk.
Right.
So, you know, you have this weird, I almost have to balance both things. It's like, is drunk driving more dangerous than getting potentially sexually abused in the back of an Uber? Like, it's I am so split on this particular concept. And fact of the matter is, I don't, you know, I think the whole thing of matching people with perhaps, you know, more trained drivers, perhaps, who can deal with the situation, or let's say maybe drivers who are more willing to deal with drunk passengers, that's fine. But the fact that they have said that there's the possibility that you can be completely denied from being in an Uber while drunk, I think is totally missing the point.
How about they train their all their drivers to be able to deal with people, you know, who are, you know, drunk or whatever? I mean, I think every single driver who participates in this whole ride hailing thing should have, at the bare minimum, you know, some medical training.
Yes.
You know,
I definitely think that that should be the case. I just don't know how, you know, effective that could be, because also how many drivers are on Uber, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you could get training like that to every single one of them, first of all. And second of all, like, already, fact of the matter is, there should be more of a screening process for your drivers if sexual abuse cases happen like this. You know, I don't know exactly what the protocol is for how Uber drivers sign up for Uber, but if there's more of a vetting process, maybe that could be part of the solution to handling that issue, as opposed to completely blocking drunk passengers from getting a ride in the first place.
Which, you're right, is completely pointless, because that's why most of us choose
that's
to use.
That's the whole point.
Right.
Yeah. So how does Uber do it? So Uber blocks them from getting a driver. It's not the driver who blocks it. So what's happening is that Uber sees that there have been a lot of cases like this of sexual assault, and they feel that if their algorithm picks up that someone is drunk, so they sort of block that person from getting a ride.
I think that's the idea. It doesn't exactly say how it would do it. It just says that the application would alert the driver with the information that this particular person is drunk. And then it says that it could use this technology to deny rights. Whether or not, like, it's from the app itself or from the driver, we don't know. But also the other thing is also that, like, if you're intoxicated or not, that shouldn't be a factor in the potential of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Is also the other thing that makes me mad. Like, it's almost blaming the people who are getting abused for being in that situation in the first place, which is totally not the case.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I'm very much so, I don't know about this. I feel that it's very much so protecting the driver more than the rider as well. But I don't know.
And also, why would you give someone that information, especially the person who's picking you up? Like, why would you tell them that this person is drunk? And also, if you have a problem with so many of these sexual assault cases, then you have a problem with the way you filter your drivers. Yeah. So why
That's
would
what
you,
Chris just said. Yeah.
Yeah. So why would you give them that information in the first place? Mm. Like, you know, to say, like, look, this person that you're potentially picking up is drunk.
Actually,
but what was that thing in China a couple of weeks ago that we talked about? How they had a rating system for how pretty the passengers were.
Yeah. So I guess the more information you give the drivers, also, they could potentially take advantage of that. Because with that story, it was that you could rate your passenger, you could tag your passengers, with descriptors like pretty girl, long legs, whatever, and that unfortunately led to a case where this girl got murdered.
Murdered, yeah.
So I'm now in a situation where, you know, if I know that my Uber driver knows that I'm intoxicated, and if they're the ones who have the power to accept or not, then that puts me in almost more danger, because if they know that I'm intoxicated, they could take advantage of me more. Mm. Like, they could plan it out. Mm. If let's say hypothetically that an Uber driver is a sexual predator of some kind, they now have that exact information to target these passengers.
Mm. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
So I don't know about this.
It's a weird workaround.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't look like a solution to a problem. It just looks like some weird workaround to a problem that they don't actually want to solve.
Exactly. It's so that they are not held accountable, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they can kind of go, oh, it's not us. You know, we decided not to take this person on. Anyway, let's have a break. Let's have... okay, we've got some Raya music coming up right now. And then when we get back, we're onto our final story that even in the desert, an innovative device pulls water out of thin air, just like when we first met Luke Skywalker on Tatooine. That's the story we've got coming up in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's time for our final story of the day. Even in the desert, an innovative device pulls fresh water out of thin air.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
I wish we could do that with money, you know? Just click your fingers. Yeah. Oh, that would be helpful.
We all wish.
Right, so on any given day, you're surrounded by water suspended in the air as imperceptible vapor. Yes, we know that. Mm-hmm. The idea of harvesting this water has deep roots in the sci-fi culture, as we know, as I just mentioned, like Luke Skywalker on the desert planet Tatooine. He was toiling away on his uncle's vapor farm before his uncle and auntie were vaporized. But similar devices have also taken... If you haven't seen Star Wars, come on. But anyway, similar devices have also taken shape in the real world. One of the biggest challenges engineers face when designing water harvesters is how to keep the device cool. To form water vapor, the device has to be cooler than the air around it. That might mean using a cooling fan, which would prove feasible in areas where easy access to electricity, but not in undeveloped regions. Excuse me. Where water scarcity is at its worst, finding another solution is the key. So in a study published last week in the journal Science Advances, University of California, Berkeley researchers demonstrated a unique approach to water harvesting that let them extract drinkable water from desert air without the need for external energy. I'm not going to read the rest of the article because it's all very scientific and technical. Mm. Basically, what they've got is this stuff that they are calling the MOF, or the Metal Organic Framework.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a highly porous material, porous meaning it has holes in, and stuff can go in and out, with internal cavities and channels that give it a huge surface area. So an MOF, the size of a sugar cube, has the internal surface area of a full football field.
Oh.
So the high surface area ensures high capacity for the captured water. So they've got this stuff inside these little boxes,
right.
Lots of this powdery MOF stuff. And what happens is, during the day, it captures what seems to us to be imperceptible amounts of water vapor.
Right.
And as it starts to heat up because of the sun, mm-hmm. what it does is it spits out that water and it drips to the bottom. How simple is it? It's just a powder that captures vapor, and then when it warms up, it spits that water out and it drips.
So it's a box, and then it has the MOF in it.
In it, yeah.
And then it releases the MOF.
When it warms up.
When it warms up.
Yeah.
And then it turns the vapor
into
water.
Into drinkable water.
And like what, one sugar cube size portion of the MOF could work on like a football field?
No. That one sugar cube size of the MOF has the same surface area as a football field.
So you could technically flood a football field with the water?
No, what it means is, so if you have a football field and over a period of time, the amount of water vapor that would be gathered on that football field is equivalent to the same size as a sugar cube's worth of the MOF.
Okay.
Oh, okay,
right.
okay.
Are we making sense now?
Yes.
Okay. So they did a trial in Arizona, and the harvester yielded just about 7 ounces of water. Not enough to quench anybody's thirst, mm-hmm. but enough to show that it feasibly works. Mm-hmm. It's especially important for regions where access to clean water is limited.
Yeah.
Now, they know that there's a lot of steps ahead before a device could come into the market, because they have to scale it up. But they're looking at using different types of MOF, including stuff like aluminium as part of it, because it will make it cheaper to produce, and then they could just roll it out everywhere where there's desert areas and where there's, you know, arid regions and all this kind of stuff. It's a really, really clever idea, and it's cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it means you don't have to put in huge amounts of pipelining. They could just put these boxes everywhere with this MOF stuff in, and there you go, water vapor. Yeah.
No mention of like any effects on the environment, stuff like that?
Nothing. They say it's completely harmless. The water vapor that it collects is immediately drinkable because it's just taken straight out of the air.
Right.
Wow.
Magical,
nice.
That's genius.
Very
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So poor old Luke's aunt and, you know, uncle.
Uncle.
Yeah, they could have had a couple of these, and that would have been.
They could have had like a thriving business.
They could have had a thriving business,
but they didn't have the foresight.
Nope, just blue milk. Okay, time to wrap up the show. Let's quickly run through the stories that we covered today. We started off with
four Chinese pedestrians glued to their phones, a middle path emerges, pedestrian phone lanes outside a mall in Xi'an.
Then we spoke about Noonie's chairless chair and how it lets you sit anywhere you want with a wearable chair.
The chairable.
Yeah, the chairable.
Yay!
And then the skeleton. And then we also spoke about how Goldman Sachs used AI to predict that Brazil would win this year's World Cup.
Mm-hmm. And on a slightly less funny AI-related note, Uber is working on AI to identify drunk passengers and possibly use that technology to deny drunk riders.
Wrapping up with how in the desert a new device pulls water out of thin air using what they call the MOF, which, if I remember correctly, I'm trying to find it. What was it called? MOF.
Metal
Organic Framework.
There we go.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You're welcome.
If you missed any part of this show, shame on you, first and foremost. but if you wanted to listen back, you can, of course, download the BFM app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play and listen back at your leisure. Now, don't go anywhere, though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. And as the month of Ramadan draws to a close, the panel from this morning reflected on the place of religion and the role of religious institutions post-GE14. They discussed the dynamics of religious movements in Malaysia as well as issues at the forefront for the Malay Muslim community with Zainab Anwar from Musawa and Muhammad Raimi Abdul Rahim from the Muslim Youth Movement. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, let's have some music to take us out of the show. We've got Ted Leo and the Pharmacists with Me and Mia, followed by White Denim with Custard Pie. You have been listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arvin Uraj and Christine Wong, have yourselves a lovely afternoon, and we'll be back same time, same place tomorrow on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.